Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while walking. I'm going to cover some basic technical stuff in terms of a better school accelerometer, but these are basic teaching issues on how you can go forward. Now, I think as perspective, my sort of training is as a technology strategic analyst. So I analyze the technology, analyze the strategy, and sort of think beyond. And I think I'm using, I very much believe in Clausewitz. I haven't actually pronounced him. I've only read about him in Army Strategy Journals, the Australian Army Journal. And the critical thing here is trying to identify the center of mass of a problem. You know, that if one had control of that, that would change the entire system. Now, I actually don't think this is necessarily a very logical thing to do, but I do think it gets you thinking and planning before you commit resources, which is the fundamental thing. So you're thinking, what are the key aspects of it? So I'll, in this case, I'm thinking about what's the key aspects forward, and it gets me not thinking about how I'm going to get there, because I've got obstacles all in front of me. So in this way, I think this Clausewitz, I think it's The Art of War, or that's, he's a German military theoretician, and just wrote down some basic, I think he wrote down 232 rules of war. I cannot really remember that. So a lot of my memory, direct memory, is gone. I've got sort of this foggy memory at the back. But he did write rules of war. And the interesting thing is, it's not necessarily the theories there, but the strategy. It's sort of like a doctor doing diagnosis. They'll do an examination, and their initial theory and intelligence is not there, but the fact that they've got a relationship and they're doing an analysis, they can pick things up. So going through forward here, I have a block. I can't straight away get back into teaching. I've got the physical things to get across. This is the stroke, the ability to talk and present on these things. And if you've stuck with me over a year, you've seen me slowly improve bit by bit. And reading ahead, thinking ahead. It's not a linear thing. I'm just getting these blocks together. That's one obstacle. The other obstacle is the actual structural obstacle that if I want to get back, I have to qualify through all these processes. I've looked at the various training, and the training is really out of date. And it's not so much there's not out of date training, in date training. There is no in date training, simply because the technology has moved so quickly and the structure has changed. So in a certain sense, it's the worst nightmare scenario. This is someone who's looking at the theoretical aspects of things going forward and can sort of think ahead. And you'll hear how I just got my head a mobile phone accelerometer dynamics cart. And I'm trying to look at the general deployment, the actual direction to go forward. This is what should go into the intelligent beaker, what's in a mobile phone, what's elsewhere. And it's an important, it's a complicated place. So it's sort of, if you imagine terrain, it's going down a hill, walking through the dry part of a swamp, up through a forest. So you've got all these different terrains, and it's not just head for the swamp, it's head for the hill. You have to go for these different ways forward. So that's what I'm thinking. I know this may sound very complicated, but I'm trying to actually work out which is the best route forward. Now, that being said, I've just picked up other information. This is just generally researching. I've read this book, which I'm doing in the background, which is called Chasing the Sun. They refer to Winston Churchill's science fiction novel. You read everything about Winston Churchill. Doesn't come up on the internet whatsoever. You open the book and you can actually get the book through Gutenberg. It's 87 pages long by Winston Churchill. And so this is at the background saying, well, I've got to hunt there. And then this is background stuff, looking at Schopenhauer from a chapter earlier, saying I'll have to upload that particular philosopher. Now the interesting thing is that in all these areas I'm researching away and identifying targets which are outside the conventional belief structure, so the belief structure that Winston Churchill was a statesman but didn't write science fiction. So you go through, and now what will typically happen is that I will say that I've read this and people ridicule it, and it's to understand going forward. And I think I will print it out and podcast you Winston Churchill's science fiction, because it's well worth it. And it's really interesting to see two angles on Winston Churchill. Indirect, one is by the Japanese general who defeated him, and the other thing is by, which is really interesting, how he, the Japanese general, Shinju Aji, something like that. It sounds like the Japanese Prime Minister. Colonel, I can't remember his name. There you go. So tough, isn't it? But he says great respect, but he's made these assumptions and it's incorrect, and that's my justification going forward. And now I'm back, nothing like this. I just say, let's open it up, let's research in, let's really understand. It's a sort of a penetrative, seeing Winston Churchill not as a figure, an event, a status symbol, a thing, as a Winston Churchill as a process. Let's get into it. The other aspect is if you go look at the process which leads to German right-wing, whatever it is, you've got Schopenhauer, Wagner, a whole series of English, basically Nazi types. You know, the 1930s in general, everywhere it was a real agonizing time to go through. And now what's led for it is a code of conduct. There is a code of conduct which is some sort of been abused by public service and things like this. This is the way that one should act, and they're not following it. So that's an interesting aspect of it. But to go right back, the powerhouse behind it is this Schopenhauer, and I've just begun to read him, read his quotes, and I'll read a section of him. So I have more than enough podcasting to come across. So essentially, getting back onto the main topic of this, and I've got to walk at reasonable speed to the national park and back. This is just to burn, a bit over 100 calories each day, and just to keep the weight down. I'm sort of restricting diet just to get the mass on target. But getting back to looking at the system of projects that I've developed, the Einstein de Haas project, and I've just got new equipment in for that, and it looks as though I'll be able to execute that rather well. I'm keenly aware that besides people who I turn up and show and come to my house and see, writing an email to people, physics lecturers, saying, I've done this, would you like to see it? No chat, no response whatsoever. So I'm just trying to work out the communication aspects of the Einstein to Hass. And I've got more advanced materials, better electrodes, and they just thought it's all coming together. So it's just, I've got a, now the, what is it, the, looking on the internet, you don't have sufficient information. It tells you characteristics which are not explained. So you order it in. You say, how am I going to mount this? And it just so happens that it mounts perfectly in your aluminium, extruded aluminium, and it's a little bit spooky. And also having read the imposter effect, that I just go back to the imposter effect. When you get these great things falling together, people from the outside can say, no, it's you've actually got talent, and you're not accounting for it. But by the law of statistics, it just so happens that everything appears to look together, and I'm incredibly lucky. So the actual Einstein pendulum, which I've next building, happens to be precise in the right direct dimensions. Everything being it's, this is down to 100 micron tolerance, just ordered off the internet. And it's not that I'm smart or anything, I'm just incredibly lucky on this particular project. And it's interesting that I can develop this project further and further and push forward, see what's happening, and work out what's happening. It's very interesting to see that if you've got multiple strands of projects and it's not going forward, you can see sometimes that when you suggest a new project, because a new project is outside people's experiences, they don't respond to an email. They put the email aside, which is a really interesting thing to see. So that is happening. It's just what's the next thing to do. So overall, I've got this push to go forward, but an understanding that there's nothing set up for where I'm someone to rehabilitate from where I'm coming in from. There's nothing set up. The actual training itself, even if they got the best training, a lot of the ideas are seriously out of date. And there is this need for strategic planning. So, sort of second tier project. So the first tier projects are the Einstein effect. There's something called the Thompson effect, and space education. They're top tier, and they're going ahead at their own rate. The next sort of tier, one of the ideas is intelligent beaker. And the concept of the intelligent beaker is mixing sort of advanced, newly reduced, accessible technology. These are microscopic chips, which are Wi-Fi, and being able to cluster a series of sensors together, and including the chip also manages its own battery charging. So this goes together, sits on the beacon, and the beacon now tells its mass, weight, pH, everything on time, and produces it for us all over Red Rover. And that seems very accessible, and I've put in a modest purchase order to get the various things to get up and going. And I've sort of have understood that there's been sort of two tiers of development. There's been a USB from the RS-232, which is the old serial ports. You remember those 9-pin plugs? 9-pin and 23. There you go. I'm not sure whether that's true. That's just, again, inaccessible memory. That is, the word comes to my head, but I cannot physically go through a process and physically remember it. It's just, an image isn't there. My brain's counted the number of pins without me knowing. And I've said, so I'm not sure whether that's correct. So that's the RS232, RS4, something rather 5485. And the basic protocol there. Now what's changed is, IC squared, it's not IC2, it's IC squared technology and USB. So USB's gone in one direction, or there's sort of like three branches of technology which has evolved. But the IC squared one is just far high speed security stuff. Rather than listening and taking anything, trying to work out what the time is, there's a master clock. It's sending not the voltage, not the signal line, it's sending now a clock pulse. That clock pulse then coordinates its little universe. It's actually quite amazing to understand how that goes. And then that just means technologically there's an area base for making this intelligent beacon. Now the intelligent beacon is based on the fact, learning principle, that the more wires I have, the more things I have to plug together, the less likely it is to work, the more complex it is to operate, the harder it is to teach. So if you can imagine a step down in ease of teaching and the complexity, that is, the lower grade students have this to distract them, the higher grade students can go much further. Overall, in terms of if you had mapped it in space, the intelligent beaker is the thing to go. Look, I'm actually doing really well here. Oh. So I've just got to keep it up. That's there. But then you ask yourself, well, how does this fit together? How will it go together? And where's the IP? And I won't discuss the full set of IP. So the intellectual property, this is something if you were to build it, it would give you an easy to write patent, defensible, and you could start a company with it. And I think you can do it. Now I can't really discuss those topics with you. However, looking outside of that, you're looking at other topics. So what I'm building with the wireless battery chip sensors is really a mobile phone. It's about a sensored mobile phone where the mobile phone has one temperature sensor. I have two and they can be placed, whereas the mobile phone has, I don't know, other things. So really, where should one place the mobile phone? And there's this art that a tech head will try and do everything, and a marketing person will cover things up so it will look good in magazines. And these are not necessarily the things. Doing everything and making it look good is not necessarily the peak educational experience. So the next sort of major thing one wants to do is measure voltage and current in a circuit. Now, one of the major, if I can say already ahead, look, there are bozos there, and the issue is that I haven't come in with the stream and been educated with the stream and cross-reference. I've come in outside and been able to pinpoint flaws in the teaching. So we're talking about electronics teaching, and I'll just go through the fundamental flaws. One of the most fundamental flaws is the lack of understanding that the constant voltage is provided. You don't get that out of battery. You might get it out of battery, but you plug something in the wall, it's constant voltage. You plug in a light, whatever, like this, gives more current and constant voltage. How that's done is that there is computers controlling everything. So a lot of things you have to say is, it is computers will either supply constant current or constant voltage or constant power. What to do? Constant power is in solar cells coming across. Computers do it, and that's missing. The second thing, or I could name half a dozen things. A lot of people think that due to the way it has been taught, that resistance is the gradient of voltage. The IV curve, and this is not correct. The resistance is V divided by I. At any particular component, across that component will be a voltage difference, and divided by I. And so that you've got those misconceptions coming in, on top of a sporadic way which does not build a picture of potential difference across a circuit, current across a circuit. It's lost. And so we're in a bad situation, and I'm thinking, well, how do we go forward with this? And the first iteration I had was a little mobile phone battery, an ESP8266. I see, I can now remember these bloody things, sorry. IC squared for either temperature, voltage and current. Just get these up. So these are a little sub-chips which you plug onto a breadboard in a glass case. So it's clicked over and with a sealant. So you're getting up to possibly $50. However, $50, but in mass production, $5. Okay, so you can produce a prototype for $50, but mass production, you could speak to someone in China and say, look, I need a lot of these, I'll sell them worldwide. These are the teaching ones. And this would, and then you could put capacitive sensors. So this could be a, what's called a clicker. So one of these could be used in class as teaching. Now, this, we'll just go through different ways forward, in terms of, we're trying to get the minimum, the class to which center of mass is clutter, equipment clutter. When you want to declutter your explanation, you need to declutter it. The idea of this is so you could build a reasonable unit to do a fair amount of things. It would be wireless and stuff. And there's a certain amount of advantage in wireless, but sort of not. The idea is these would be sufficiently cheap and stackable. So you stack them up and the charging electrodes go on top of each other. I'm sure we'd have in Australia. It's amazing that Australia is now in advance of the United States in some areas. So apparently in the United States, because it's still tipping, it's still a cash economy, where Australia very rarely, well, a lot of people just do things cash, so they just have a card and swipe it wherever they want to go. Get everything done that way. And I think it's in McDonald's as well. You have these discs and they just click on top of each other and the charging is catered for. And if everything is wireless, they can all do diagnostics. And so you have the idea is that you have to say voltage is like money and the potential difference sums up a range of circuit. You have to explain it and see if you increase the current, everything goes and stuff like that. So ideally you need to see that if I've increased the current, the voltage increases everywhere on every resistor. This is a series circuit, and you know, you've got to really think about it. But So this is down one path. Now, the interesting thing is because you cut out, you're not committed to anything. This is looks, and my kids said, "Oh, what's that? A drawing?" I had a drawing of this little clear pencil case where the students can actually see this is a circuit done with wires. Perhaps I could do it as well. What is that part? This is for this is declutter, but open the door. So, like with the intelligent speaker, declutter, but open the door for people who want to see more. This is declutter, make it clear, and open the door for kids who want to go further so they can actually go through, and that's the wires. So if they want to, they can pursue. If their interest takes in that direction, the path is open. But there's all this complexity. So for everything you do, there's certain motor skills of moving a wire and the time between you connect and look at the circuit. And there's a whole series of things. So once you connect it, there's that time of from connection to reading the voltage. And in that time, it's sort of like a IC squared circuit thing, clock thing. You don't want interruption. And how do you solve it? But there is an advantage is that you have, say, five of these meters. Now, I do know very much from going to a conference on women's science education. Now, this is really interesting. I've been to this conference. I've spoken at it. But when it comes to peer assessment of what I know, it's you don't know anything. You're rubbish, you can't go forward. But nonetheless, I got together a small cosmetic case with what I perceive as female-friendly multimeters, a small, cute multimeters, and had a trajectory where a certain... this is going back before I've had gone through all this palaver, and looked at these, deploying these multimeters around, and you could see the light come on when you hit several things, allow collective work. We all sort of do collective work without interference at lunchtime. You can come and do it. And then they could see, oh, well, that adds up to that. That makes it all sensible. And put it away, it just means that I've got lots of... I've got a packet of six multimeters and a DC power supply and all this beautiful, beautiful stuff. I've got it there. And... of course, the mechanical relay. Again, it's really interesting that the girls, well, I'm not saying anything against girls, but they couldn't see underneath the glass case what the relay was doing. An interest, and there was pressure. And of course, in a school where there's, I suppose, professional jealousy and staff, things can be said and you can go away, so you can't really tell too much, but you've got that experience and background on how to teach them. And then going through, there was sort of a brainwave, or sort of a shock. Now, this is interesting because Google, knowing what I've searched before, has put advertisements for various things. I don't know, the Schopenhauer quotes that I'm reading through. There was a multimeter pen. I can't remember, you know, bloody hell, I can't tell you what it is. Multimeter pen, and it has the advantage of instantly moving the debate forward. Now, it's really interesting because you've got the inward-looking teachers teaching what they've always taught in a way that's acceptable, and they're expending their energy criticizing you, whereas you... inventing new ways of going ahead and not even building it, going into the next stage. And this is a little pen. Hold the pen on the back of the pen is written so you can see four digits, the voltage or AC voltage, stuff like that. And the pen touches the circuit and the back of the pen goes to ground. So it's pretty amazing. So this allows you to quickly connect, and see the voltage over and retain it in your brain. you may be lucky. Now, from education-wise, what this means is that you have a post-it note. You see the voltage. One person writes the voltage down, says it, writes it down in a post-it note, and then puts a post-it note there. Then you come back, and then you can see your circuit with the post-it notes. Notes on, you can confirm it, and it does certain things. It's not to say that this technology isn't quite there. Now, I'm going to have to... So as that's come to ascendancy, the little see-through pencil case may still be there to do certain things, but there's certain things that... and I can't give this away. Oh, look, I can give it away. What happens is that I... sort of like moisture being absorbed. I just have to see. I've bloody been recording. Oh yeah, I'm still recording this time. And I'm just going down. It's still really killing me going down here. Oh, but I've really just got to keep this fired up. So look, I'm just going to change analogy. So in terms of IP and strategy, you have to be aware of yourself. So if your main objective is rehab, it is pointless to pull down the acceleration of you going forward because you don't have the other skills to commercialize something. And the analogy is, so to look where the commercial skill is, to recognize where the innovation could be and could be worthwhile. To put ahead. And I really do think we have something here which could actually go ahead. Now, it's very similar to a paper towel absorbing water. We know that the water is drawn into a paper towel because it's energetically more effective. It's only when you look at this with an infrared camera do you see that the leading edge where the paper towel is touching the water jumps a couple of degrees, then goes in and equilibrates to the paper towel temperature. So in general, or the overall temperature, but you get this leading edge of where it's absorbing, you see this racing hot. Now this is interesting that this is on the internet, but the people putting it up there haven't actually spotted it. Now, this is similar with IP. You've got to look at the process and try and pick out where it is. So I think I'll, there is a product there which I'll have to, talk to and see where it's going. I also have to analyze why communication isn't working, you know, why things aren't working. But the bottom line is that this, a quantity, I think, in Australian dollars is $36 and $20 US, which is about right. That's the exchange rate. But in quantities, if you're at school, you'll possibly get it cheaper. And the advantage of these things is that the student gets a circuit, and as they tap around the circuit, they see the voltage and write it down and put it across. So I was looking inside of YouTube, the inside years, you can possibly hack in a wireless aspect of it, but that's not really... To do wireless, you need a certain level of complexity, like a demonstration. But it is actually the actual having in the hand and putting it across that act is an act of concentration. They have to concentrate and see it. So this has got great, great teaching advantages, and it's the clear way to go there. So, which is really interesting because as that's defined forward, I can pull back the technological definition of the intelligent beaker, which I will pull out, and of course I can talk about it because I know I've identified where the intellectual property is should I ever want to commercialize it. So I can build the concept prototype but not show the key advantage which would make it commercially have to have. Now, what I have to understand is that Australia has a great manufacturing base if you want to, because we can just go off to China and say, make it for us, mate, and split it 50-50, so there's not a lot of capital investment here, but there is a way of getting it forward, whereas the US is a different story. So we're sort of like, we're outside the US, where everything is can do advance. It's a little bit more complicated, a little bit more slow, but I still think we'll be able to do it. So getting back, there's the intelligent beacon, there's the way of doing circuits, and again, there is just so much which is mistaught. One of the things I find most depressing is that people don't know that a dry cell releases hydrogen at the end of it, and that the idea that they don't understand this is quantum mechanically driven, that the electron is going to a lower energy state. So the electron is moving where it can. The electron is going in a path and falling into an atom. And in doing so, when it does this, it liberates hydrogen. It's sort of a pretty amazing process. But from a quantum physics standpoint, it's just, you know, appalling. And I think I'm beginning to work my way through it. Now, given that you have to ask, what is the difference between a mobile phone, which is mass-produced, cheap, and you've got a huge amount of power for the price, and and this intelligent beaker, where can this go? And so what I have shown, I think it is up there. I've put a YouTube up there. I don't think anyone's watching it just as well. It doesn't really matter. I think it says quantum is coming in a Game of Thrones meme with a Schrodinger wave equation to say, look, it's coming. One would say, well, what are you doing with a mobile phone? How's that quantum mechanics? Well, it's going to liberate certain things. And so, looking at the mobile phone, a short hop, step, and a jump, you can make it into an actual physics hole. Holds bolos, Nick's physics laboratory, all running there. You can get the information in and out, and the kids know how to do it. And then, I went on the entire thing, is that, there's one point holding your hand and doing it, but you have to actually really put it onto a dynamics trolley. A dynamics trolley has the problem that they're big, bulky, heavy, stupid things that really work very well. And there's this long lead time. It's got to be put in a cart into the classroom. They have to take it out. They have to measure it. They have to weigh it. Do all these sorts of things. And so I'm just going to take a break here. Okay, so you have to build a dynamics trolley. So basically, dynamics trolley is a toy car which goes in one direction, and you can attach ticker tape to it. You can explore things. It's got a mass, constant velocity. It does the sort of the basics of linear momentum. Now, it's interesting in that I think my wife is, well, I don't know, she's often, I only say this in that she asked my son, Sebastian, my son's name, don't tell me you've done dynamics trolley, because there's a picture of a dynamics trolley they found at dinner time this weekend. And I said, I was looking at doing this. Oh, indeed, you do have it. And then there was a question. I said, there's a question of why this pizza I made last night was oily. And I said, I think it's because of the nature of the cheese, the way it's done, this casein versus albumin, which is in mozzarella. So mozzarella is a buffalo-derived albumin cheese, and from curd. And fortunately, she was able to say, Google! And there was a yes. It went on for a while, and then it said buffalo, curd, and given up there. So we have dynamics trolleys, and people have a concept of what the dynamics trolley should be, and a school system, and one of the things I was looking at is where you can if you can get wheels, how the wheels have a problem that they decay, break off, they take a lot of shock, and they're not really low friction to a certain extent. And you can make them low friction, but to make them low friction you make them more delicate. And so I was looking at things where you could just stick on wheels with magnets, so they could be delicate and they could break off. The main thing is that they break off in a way which looks after the wheel, and then if it breaks you can just place another wheel, so you have your dynamics trolleys there and you put on your magnet wheels. The essential thing. And I was looking at the rolling friction of a wheel, and it's the number of revolutions that wheel does in its bearing. It's the distance where the bearing goes. So the bearing gets smaller and smaller, lighter and lighter and lighter, and the wheel gets bigger and bigger in dimension. You can make sure it does fewer revolutions and travels a smaller distance, and then you can have grease-free bearings. The advantage of grease in the classroom in Australia is that it manages the dust. And so it's looking at all these aspects together, and whether how you can actually construct all of these things together. And that being said, it's going to possibly be better to build a hovercraft than energy for weight. Hovercraft, the actual best way to store energy, best energy for weight storage, is compressed air. So, and then I remembered air hogs, and I looked at air hogs, and air hogs has abandoned compressed air as a technology. And I was looking at, there's these flying saucers you can make, where you have, rather than fans, stuff like that, you have a laminar flow of the air, and the air goes out at right angles, but it's laminar flow. The laminar flow can't detach from the surface of the boundary and points downwards. And this is sort of ideal. This downward pressure then places a direct upward pressure, and you could shape it such that it would form this large hovercraft. Because one of the things that you need in the hovercraft has a large area that's not used. So with this, I've forgotten what it's called, this technology, this allows you to have the airflow and air pressure on the surface of this, and on top of that, on top of this, so you've got basically a dome-shaped thing, and inside of the dome is the compressed air, which is then released at high pressure. Now, the problem is that air pressure is got a lot of energy. You are storing it in there. And you want to have it like this, this shape, and you have it in there. And the thing is that you can have the basic thing is it only has to transport it for one collision, then it can recharge and all that type of stuff. Air stuff, and a light pole battery is pretty amazing. This is a new thing, but this air pressure will be much, much better, and you could control it somehow. I was just looking at this technology, but it turns out that air hogs, which is compressed air engines, they're now vintage things. I remember we had one when I was a kid, I was looking after my kids when they. Young, we had one that was fantastic. You pump it up and it would fly for a very short distance of around an oval. Bloody dangerous thing. So, of course, you can't have any of this. Now, the great thing about this is that they've got this thing. It's brilliant high-pressure air. How do you convert it to useful use? Because it's like a high-voltage capacitor. And so if you're wanting to do something like this, this is ideal use of a supercapacitor. A supercapacitor allows you to charge up, get the fans going. It's got the fans motors. With this, the air pressure is the way to go. Now the air entraps, so a small amount of high pressure air traps a larger volume. This is like the big Dyson fans, so big circular fans. There's a ring of laminar flow on the inside, and that entraps a hole. The air, high pressure air, pushes a larger volume of air with it. I think that's the basic way to do it. So this is the hovercraft thing, and so that's got the advantage. The student's phone goes on top of a hovercraft, and it's sort of fun. However, the actual technology to implement this is not immediately accessible. Now look, we might be able to do something here. I'm coming down. Oh, this is going to be a real killer. What I'll do is I'll go up the other side just to, because I've got to really burn off these calories. Pushing it. So that's something there. But the actual air pressure technology is just not going to go. This is that whole hovercraft technology, which is not empty. The whole problem is that you've got something which is larger volume, and the other thing is that you want to load this up with more and more weight. You know, this is how's this going to do? And so as you start to load this up with more and more weight, because you've got to have the weights into the kilogram rate. If the weight's 20 gram, 50 gram, the student doesn't know the difference between it. But if it's 100 gram, 500 gram, a kilo, they'll definitely know. And so the process is to find ball bearings, ball bearing pulleys to go across. And so one track is to go down. So you want to have this as controlled push. So obviously the controlled push is to have it a certain height, and it goes down a certain angle and goes down to a certain speed. And now there's the issue of being able to track it. Now, one of the things is that you say, oh, I can build all this tracking technology. The tracking technology is, this is beautiful. This is rather a bit sad here. In that it has rained, and the water level goes up and down. So what's happened is that with the urbanisation, so I believe, it means that the water level, since it's rained today, the water level's already dropped down. It just means there's a lot more violent floods and stuff like that going up here. So going up this other side of the gorge, just down to the bottom gorge. We've got this technology. So how are we going to do it? How are we? So getting back to the classic center of mass focus, the intelligent beaker will work better with the deployment of the intelligent multimeter. Will work better with the mobile phone. So the everything mixed to its purpose. Now you've got all the advantage disadvantage of storing these things, and so you want something to hold the mobile phone. The American solution, which is vernier, which I think is really poor science. I just look at the whole thing. I've seen it. We've had air tracks. They're great things. But when you've got a class, you've got the inquisitive kid, less inquisitive kid that stands back and doesn't get the full experience of it. And you've got quick class rotation, just the way it's orientation, so you can't leave your equipment out. And it used to be a 70-minute lesson, now it's a 50-minute lesson. At 20 minutes is death, because it's just awful to go across. However, so building specialist tracks are really good, but what you can do is have these three-wheel micro trikes for $30 each, which you might be able to get less, and you build onto it, the mobile phone, and take off the stuff, and have a weighing station for it. Now for the weighing station, for something like this, there is this room for, I suppose, a smart beaker, again, to be able to measure the mass of it in a precision way. But these things can now be lined up. They have a reasonable big frontage, and they don't have the position of where things are at. And so what you have to do is you have to go through a series of education good things. So if I fire one of these across between two points, say over, they travel 2 meters, and it takes a certain amount of time, you'll be able to read that on your mobile phone, because for your sudden increase in acceleration, when it accelerates, no acceleration, sudden deceleration, you'll get a time, you know the distance, you can get the V average, and between these things for the impulse, and you can do 1 meter, 2 meters, 3 meters for the same impulse, and as it's taking longer to 3 meters, you can start to pull this information out. It's very important to do the V average and across for it. Again, using the mobile phone. And then the important thing is that they must have a kinetic superelastic component to it, because again, this is a misconception. So I'm really breathing hard to get up here. This is a misconception that, well, collisions are just a shambles. There's people over there on a cliff edge. They've got some lighting. I don't know if they know they're in real risk over there. Sorry, just says some bushwalkers on the other side of this, and you can see them. And from this angle, you can see that they're only 5 meters away from certain death, but hopefully they won't do anything. As with the handheld voltmeter, it's the circuitry, the learning circuitry, closing that down and looking at cognitive stuff. Now, if I can say this one brilliant thing, having a stroke, you become very aware of your cognitive load. Now, for me, the issue is I put things down, know where I put it, but cognitively I will not register it. So I will not, I put down old mobile phone, I'll forget what it looks like, so not be able to find it. Or if I put keys on a rack, I'll scan it for keys I've got, and you know that you start hunting about it, and you go back, they're on the rack where you put, but you just didn't see them. So you're overly aware of the cognitive load. This goes up, and the need to have the data right near it. This is improving all the time as I push myself. But so here is a limited data output, and using learning and cooperation to get acceleration and different masses. Now, and as I said, in a collision, there's three processes basically a free unimpeded movement towards the collision, Okay. Yeah, that's obviously it has to get to the collision. Then the storage of storage or not conversion of kinetic energy into stored kinetic energy or so potential energy at springs or other things so in an elastic collision the springs re-energize, they get energy put into them. That's one half. So the second phase is two halves. The storage, the deformation, and then elastic restoration or loss process. Now the interesting thing is it's deformation and loss, or deformation, storage, and conversion. So the second bit either finishes halfway through or has the second part. So one of the things is if you have a bumper, elastic bumper, you double the effect of your collision because you accelerate in, come to a halt, and then you accelerate violently backwards again. So why? Now, this is interesting because as you see, speaking to a table, the teachers did not understand that. They didn't teach it, and it was lost. The fact that why you don't have an elastic bumper is that you double the traumatic acceleration. So you de-accelerate, get thrown forward, and then you get thrown forward a second time, so you move back, so it doubles it. And they didn't know it, and they don't teach it. And so it's really important that this device has it here. So you can have various things. And what would be ideal is if you could have a copper underplate. So these are the little trikes that are available in Kmart and Target for Australian dollars, $30. I'm sure you could get them for less. And they're available. And the cuties ones. And it's got everything ready for it. And so it allows you to deploy forward. So these things can go forward. They need this spring on them. So I'm just up at the other side, and the gradient is not so brutal. I could go up to the top. I'll turn around at this speed sign because I've got to get back. Because I've got medical appointments tomorrow. I can't be tired of them. Okay, let's see. Okay, 20 kilometers an hour. I can easily do 20 kilometers an hour. Oh, whew. Now, it's sort of rather sad because I've been walking into this just wilderness in front of me. The sky is dark, but it's actually quite an illumination of the city up against the clouds. And it's sort of a bit sad. I can remember in the army bases outside Sydney, the urban sprawl has increased and you had the navics and you could see the centre of Sydney illuminated, and there's still some difficult parts, but it's part of the world. Getting back into it, I can see how this goes. So really the intelligent beaker comes with the voltmeter, comes with the mobile phone trolley, comes with the other technology, which I think is the way to go. It Yeah, it's just really interesting to see how it can go. Shoo, I've just got to think exactly how it goes. Yeah, look, I'm just in my head just going through, which is essentially the deployment of a... This is basic strategy thinking in terms of you're thinking... not necessarily on the direct target, okay, in your strategy. I'm going to take that hill or I'm going to close that port off. You're thinking strategically, how does this all come together? And in the case of particularly really early on, you don't have the forces there. You haven't made the commitment for it. You have to make an argument. You know, someone else has got another up-and-coming idea. You have to actually build the speaker story together. So I think with the intelligent beaker, building a family of products with it is the way to go. And to identify what is commercially amazing. So there is really nothing to do except buy this. And this is just a multimeter reformed to fit in your hand. It's this brilliant thing. They're charging a pittance, or quite a lot for it, but it's trying to work out how it goes. And the other aspect of it is that with everyone is not thinking at the technology strategy level, so they don't see that a decision now is formulated with a descending price point. So you've got these two factors which go into it. So in summary, in terms of the points to sort of the general thing, is being able to operate with a low reliance on credibility and feedback and isolation, but then to recognize this handheld multimeter. So it's a pen. Is it like a pen? It's sort of like a thick pen which goes around your hand. You put the pen nib on your circuit. In the back of the pen, the wire goes out to ground. And as it goes, it gives 500. So the advantage is that the art of connection and the looking is one. And then, you know, ideally, you would say, well, wouldn't it be great if it printed it out? However, there is the art of communicating it. Presumably, you could. And it's interesting that this is right-handed and left-handed, but I suppose you have to... I think it is right-handed. Bloody hell. I didn't really think of that. But, ideally, a left-handed person... be ideal. I'll be able to write it out at the same time. You write it out and put the post-it note there, and so that's simple. It would be nice if you had different coloured post-it notes for one amp, and you write a post-it note. That would be absolutely ideal. Wouldn't it be great to come across? Then the deployment of the mobile phone. So that can be. How do you get there? You purchase it and go ahead. How do you get to this one? You purchase these little $30 wheels. You stick to your mobile phone, which your family bought you anyway, and then you make up a story. So that allows you to get there. They're rapidly deploying the intelligent speaker. I just have to, I think, wait for next week. I've got to go on Friday to get a sensor in from China. It's one of these things I have to talk about. How it is, and that will come together. I just find it a bit disconcerting. And the other thing is, I was thinking, how do you write to a, LCD? What is it? Because I'll be used to sending ASCII, putting things to ASCII and ordering it. No, it's print LCD, blah, That's it. What? Print LCD this, and it goes on the LCD. Because it's IC squared stuff. And you've really got to wonder whether how the LCD is actually wired up in these things, because if it's IC squared, you can have your little unit sitting there as well inside, which is wireless. We're able to make these little things wireless by having parasitic connection to it. So that's the I suppose the general issue. But again, there's no advantage in something which is handheld to make it also wireless. Is stupid. So that's the general way forward. So again, this is what you get going forward, and I'll proceed on to my next podcast as I make my way home and suffer up this hill. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.